The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to our intro to mindfulness class. And today we're going to do mindfulness of thinking. And those of you who have been, some of you have been a little bit ahead of the game and already thinking. So today you'll get the instructions. And it's all very interesting, this whole mindfulness thing, to look more deeply at any of these different aspects of our life reveals so much, starting with the breath. Breath and posture the first week. It's just a whole a deep subject in itself. And you could spend a year, you could spend a lifetime just doing mindfulness of breathing as a meditation practice. The ancient records of the Buddhism, from what survives, the only meditation practice that the Buddha specifically said that he did was mindfulness of breathing. And so in the tradition, the Buddhist tradition puts a lot of value in just focusing, concentrating your breath, and just things open up. The breath is kind of like the hub for so much of our life, emotional, psychological, physical, in the world life. And Peter, what?
Sorry to interrupt. There's a gentleman outside who lives in the area and has a truck, and he says that the driveway is blocked.
Where?
It's right over here.
On Hopkins?
Yeah,
you know what kind of car? Maybe, Richard, can you find out what car it's? Let's do. Thank you. So now everybody's breath has changed. It's my car. We had one of the intro classes many years ago. I think you were here, weren't you? There was a woman who had their car towed, and she had her wallet and her cell phone in a car. And so she had to go, first you have to go to the police station to kind of sign off something, and she had nothing to show for herself because it was all in the car, right? So it took a while before. And then the tow company, if they're going to release the car at night, they charge a premium. They already charge a premium, right? So it's good to be mindful of your park. And anyway, so the first week was breath, and that's a universe in itself. And I know for people who are uninitiated or don't know this, it seems like maybe the breath is boring. What's the big deal? But it's a whole universe. You can spend a lot of time on that and posture. The next time, the body is a universe in itself also. It's fascinating. And you could spend a year or longer just focusing on your body, becoming more embodied. The body reveals so much about our life. It's just a great topic in itself. And then emotions, you know, I mean, what would human life be like without emotions? There'd be nothing for the newspapers to write about. I mean, it's like, you know, emotions are such a big part of our lives and what motivates us and what drives us and what makes novels interesting. Emotions are important parts of life. And bringing attention to emotions reveals depths and depths and how we work and what motivates us and gives us access to some of the most beautiful, important parts of human life. And then we come to thinking. And thinking is a huge part of life for many people, and probably underappreciated and overappreciated. Underappreciated and overvalued. Something like that. And finding the right balance of how to relate to thinking is very interesting. And mindfulness gives us a whole different perspective in which to look at thinking than how most people approach the world of thinking. And to say it very briefly, I believe it's probably fair to say that generally people, when they think about thinking, they think about the content of thoughts, what they're thinking about. If instead we focus on not what we're thinking, but how we're thinking, a whole different universe opens up of self-understanding. So what I mean by that, by how, maybe is best exhibited through an analogy. If you listen to two people speaking a foreign language that you don't know, you don't have a clue what they're talking about, but you might be able to tell a lot about the emotional expression that's going back. If they're really angry with each other, you know, you don't have to be fluent in that language to generally see, you know, they're about to throttle each other. And you can feel and hear the intensity of the anger. Or if people are really gentle and kind and friendly, you can kind of hear that in their tones or their voice, perhaps, or their manner. And so, let's see. Richard? It's gone?
No, I can't get to the bottom of it yet.
There's no driveways blocked that you could tell?
No. So far.
Did you look on Birch Street, too?
It's too long a story.
Okay. What? Because, okay. Thank you for checking, Richard. And I told them the dire consequences if their car gets towed. If it does, come back in time, and we're still here, and we'll try to help you if it's one of you.
anybody here have a big red truck?
Big red truck.
Drive a big red truck.
Yeah.
You do have a big red truck.
Why does it have a stop sign?
We may need you to take.
So have we clearly identified that it's our red truck that's blocking?
Yeah. Yes.
Cool. Thanks. Okay.
We'll be here. So, I didn't mean to do that long introduction, but today it's the world of thinking. And I'm hoping, you have trouble hearing? I see. Yeah, let's see. Do other people have trouble as well? How's it now? Is that a bit better? Is that better? Yeah, it feels a little bit better to me too. Good. Okay. But before I go on anymore, do you have any questions from last week or from the instructions or doing it at home, the practice? Anything you'd like to ask? Yes.
So you said that it's okay to lay down when you're meditating? About restorative yoga poses while meditating, because I did that one day and it almost felt like I was cheating. Like it was so easy. Like I usually have all sorts of discomfort and everything in my body, and I felt really comfortable. But then at the same time, I kind of know what that pose is supposed to do, so I was able to kind of focus on that a little bit. And it's I don't know if I was using that as a distraction or
maybe. What occurs to me to answer first is these two monks were in the monastery and they wanted to smoke. So one of them went to the abbot and asked if they went into the office and came out, looked all dejected. And the second one said, what did he say? He said, no, of course you can't smoke in the monastery. I think he asked, is it okay to smoke while we're praying? Of course you shouldn't smoke while you pray. And then the second one, let me ask. So he went into the abbot and asked, is it okay to pray while I smoke? Of course it's okay. You should pray all the time. So, of course you should be mindful. If you'd ask the question, is it okay to do mindfulness while I'm doing restorative poses? Of course, you should do it all the time. But should you use restorative poses as a substitute for meditation? It might be okay, it might be nice to do. But I think there's a lot of value in not using any extra support except being with yourself upright and present. And it might not be as fast to get calm, but the point is not to get calm. The point is to meet yourself and see yourself and understand what's going on in an effective way. If the goal is to be calm and have a pleasant experience, you might not become freer because of it. You might actually end up being more attached. There's something about sitting this way or sitting in a chair upright that's a balanced position that's neither overemphasizing relaxation and comfort, but not emphasizing asceticism or you know, difficulty. Finding this posture to become a balanced posture and then dealing with what comes and learning to meditate with that is a good thing to do. It's really helpful. Similar to people asking, what about listening to guided meditations? I can listen to guided meditation of you. What do you think of that? You know, something or music. I think it's fine to do those things. They're helpful to do. But it's not really, in the long term, it's not an effective way of learning how to discover how to be independent, how to be free, independent of any kind of extra support, just to be. And the goal is to learn how to be without any extra support that helps you get into any particular kind of experience. Make some sense? So when you're doing restorative yoga, be mindful. But when you're doing mindfulness meditation, I would suggest you, unless you have a health problem or a bad back and you really need to do something.
I have a couple of questions.
Is the green light on? Push it again.
I have a couple of questions. Last week, we talked about recognizing, naming, when you're supposed to name an emotion, but not judge it, at the same time investigate it. It's kind of a gray area, kind of, I mean, how can you name something and not judge it?
Maybe it depends on what you mean by judgment. But say that I'm feeling happy, and so you name it the most generic, general name that what you think it is. So if I'm feeling happy, just call it happy. And that's not meant to be any positive or negative judgment, like it's good to be happy or bad to be happy, or, you know, just a simple recognition of what it is. It's not meant to be a judgment. It's meant to be a little support to help you stay present and acknowledge what's there. Now, if you're happy and you go, oh, happy. If that's how you say happy, then there is a kind of judgment and involvement in it that's extra. So the idea is to say it kind of in a kind of simple, ordinary way. Now, if I'm feeling happy, and then, so what would be an example of a note, a mental note, label of happiness that would be a judgment as opposed to just a simple recognition? Because then maybe I understand the question better. Yeah, so can you give me an example of when a mental label would be a judgment?
I don't know.
You don't know, yeah. So I think that if it's just a very simple, ordinary, obvious label or description of what it is, one-word description of what it is, it doesn't have to involve a judgment. But not, a judgment, in my mind, would be not a recognition of what it is, but putting a value on it, that this is better than something else, this is worse than something else, this shouldn't be, this should be. That's what judgment is a little more complicated. So the idea is to avoid those secondary layers.
And then the other question I have is, so this whole mindfulness of breath, emotion, thought, for the lack of better analogy, is it like a bunny in front of a car and then you turn the headlights on and the bunny goes away? Is that what the eventual goal is? Like you're mindful to your body,
that's
emotion?
That's a good question. so you understand the question? Okay, the analogy was of there's a bunny in front of your car, and I guess at night, and you turn your headlights on and the bunny scampers away and it's gone. So the same thing with your thoughts, emotions, and different things. If the beam of your mindfulness goes on it, will it also everything scamper away and go away? And so it's an interesting question because there is something to it, what you said. But that's not the purpose, to make something go away. The purpose of mindfulness is to see clearly what's there. But sometimes when we see something clearly, it does fade away. Certain things do. And that's because some things persist through time because we're feeding it, we're involved in it. And so when we set the light of mindfulness clearly on it, it's kind of like our mental energy is going to seeing the phenomena, instead of the mental energy going to fueling it. So if I sit here meditating, wondering how I'm going to get the starter of my car fixed, how am I going to get it fixed? And it needs to be fixed. And will I manage to get home? And you know, and I feel kind of anxious now. And it's dark, and I have a long walk, and you know, maybe it's dangerous to walk around here at night. And so I keep telling myself these stories. The anxiety, the thoughts just build and build. But if I have a thought about my starter, and I see it, oh, that's a starter thought. It's just a starter, just a thought about having a broken starter. Then I don't feed the story. And as I don't feed the story, then the story fades away. Does that make sense? So same thing with emotions. Sometimes emotions only persist through time because we're telling ourselves a story, we're involved in it. I'm feeling happy. Oh, I'm so happy. It's so great. I don't know if that's the best analogy because people like to be happy. They want to. But certain kinds of emotions get fueled by our involvement. And if we just see it in an objective way, we're not fueling it anymore, feeding it anymore, and it fades away. And oddly enough, that also can happen sometimes with physical pain. And that's a little bit more difficult to understand how that works. But pain sometimes also is there because of our involvement with it. And one way to free ourselves from the involvement, being entangled with it, is to be clearly mindful of the pain. And if the mindfulness is strong enough and clear enough, it disentangles the way we're knotted up with the pain. So, I mean, one example, I mean, I don't know if it's a good example, but it's a common enough phenomena of people who have some kind of serious pain until they go to the doctor and the doctor gives a diagnosis. Oh, now because one of the factors that helps us feel pain is fear. And if we're no longer afraid, sometimes that contributing factor is enough, when that goes away, is enough to have the pain go away. And maybe I'm saying it too many times now. So the way we are involved in certain phenomena that feed and perpetuate it gets interrupted if we step back and just look at it. Does that make sense? Is that kind of an answer you were looking for, or it was not quite to the point?
Yeah.
Is it good?
Yes, it's good.
Okay. Okay. One more.
I've noticed that when I've been meditating, and this happens every time, my feet start to get numb. And I don't know if it's the way I'm sitting or what, but I've tried, you know, sitting on the pillow, just sitting on the floor, and it's been pretty consistent. So,
it is sometimes that small changes or big changes can make a difference. Sometimes what makes a difference is just being patient with it for a few weeks, and then eventually it goes away. I've known one or two people in my 40 years of meditating for whom the feet falling asleep never stopped for them. One of them is a teacher, and he was even teaching for a number of years, and at some point he said, enough is enough. and now he sits in a chair. So you could either, you know, give it a few more weeks and try and keep experimenting with different things at your posture. And is it below the knee or above the knee? Or
just ankle down.
Ankle down. And is it always the foot in the front? Or the foot?
Both.
Both at the same time? Both of them?
The
uh-huh. So one of the things you might try doing is to get a little hand towel or something, and roll it up, or a sock, and roll it up and put it underneath your ankle, so that your ankle keeps its normal angle. Because usually when you go like this, it flattens out, right? And in case the pinching is happening here, and keeping this normal. And the other thing, just might try that and see if it makes a difference, and for both of them. Okay. So I'm going to take you on a exploration of the world of thinking. And as we do this, first I'll kind of do a guided meditation just to get you a little bit here, so you're more here and arrived, you're not still at work or whatever you are. And then once you're kind of maybe a little bit calmer in here, I'll do guided exploration of thinking. So you get a little bit familiar with the terrain of thinking and what we can pay attention to when we bring attention to thinking. The exploration we're doing is not the instructions for how to be mindful of thinking. So I'll give that afterwards. Right now, I just want to introduce you to this territory, and some of the things that I guide you to do will maybe not make sense to you. Don't worry about that. Just wait for the next thing, if it doesn't make sense. Some of the things that I guide you to do might surprise you. What you discover might be surprising in the process. Just be surprised and kind of make a note. This is interesting, and I'll consider it later. Don't worry about it. Just that's interesting. I'll note it. That's for later consideration. I don't think about it now. Let's see what Gil has to say next. Make sense? Okay. So, take an upright, and there is more chairs inside here. If the people in the outer hall want to come closer, that as you wish. So, alert posture. I like to think that in the evening when people are tired, being sitting up a little bit straighter is helpful. And then gently closing your eyes. And then beginning by gentling yourself. Let yourself become gentle. Let your body become calm and at ease. Here you are. Simple place to be, IMC. A safe place to be. For these moments, everything's okay. And then it can be helpful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, to feel your rib cage and shoulders expand, even your back rib cage. And as you exhale, to soften the body, relax, settle in and settle down. Breathing in deeply, and then as you exhale, see if you can let your belly become soft. And then letting your breath return to normal. And you might scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places that you can relax. Maybe some of the muscles around the face can be softened. Muscles of your face can release from the skull. Perhaps you can soften your shoulders, releasing any holding in your shoulders, softening around the shoulder blades. Softening around the chest. And softening your belly. And then becoming aware of your body breathing. When you hold your body still and quiet. Usually the biggest movements in your body is that of breathing. Rather than watching the breathing from the control tower, see if you can feel the sensations of your body connected to breathing. Noticing how the sensations of breathing in are a different class of sensations than those involved in breathing out. And then for the next few minutes, quietly, softly, hang out with your breathing, as if your breathing is a friend that would like your company for a few minutes. Offer yourself to your breathing, breathing in and breathing out, getting to know it. Staying with your breathing, and when you find yourself thinking instead of focusing on the breath, let go of your thinking and return to your breathing. So now we'll shift focus. So now let go of your breathing. Let go of any focus on your breath. And instead, notice your thinking. For now you're allowed to think. No need to let go of your thoughts. But when you're thinking, clearly know you're thinking. As if you're watching yourself think or stepping back and looking at it from a distance. You might even very quietly say the word thinking to acknowledge that you're thinking. No attempt to let go of thinking, but just simply to see it for what it is. Some people think more in words, others think more in images. Either way, see it happening as it happens, clearly. If your thinking goes away, just wait for it to come back and then look at it again. And then if you can stay aware of your thinking as you're thinking, see if you can notice, see it kind of like if you didn't know what you were thinking, like a foreign language. See if you can notice the tone of the inner voice or the mood of the images. In what tone of voice, or what mood are inner thoughts presented in? Is it kind? Is it harsh? Is it loud or soft? Do your thoughts come fast, one after the other, or are they slow, lackadaisical? Would you say your thinking is more soft or more hard in quality? How much energy do you feel goes into your thinking? Do your thoughts just gently, softly float by? Or is there an intensity to them? And as you're thinking, is there any emotion connected to your thinking? Any emotion which maybe is the fuel for them or the companion to your thinking? And if there is, in a very simple way, acknowledge the emotion. No need to make a big deal out of it. Just recognize that maybe the thoughts arise out of emotion, or the thoughts evoke emotions. And as you notice yourself thinking or having images in the mind, so for the words, if you're thinking in words, is there a location for those words or where the thinking occurs? Is there like a loudspeaker from which they get spoken? And if there is a location, bring your attention to that part of your body and just feel what's there. If you think in images, is there a projector or a screen upon which you see the images? Is there a place for that screen? And if you bring your attention to the location, what do you feel there? What do you sense there? And as you keep thinking, hopefully you're still thinking, is there any way in which your thinking process, your thinking, expresses itself in your body energetically, with any sense of pressure or tension, holding? And if there is any physical corollary to your thinking, pressure or tension, energy, energetics, some part of your body that's activated as you think, could be in the skull, the eyes, the jaw, the shoulders, chest, hold that place, that a place in your awareness. Hold that part of your body for a little while as you notice your thinking. And then as you're thinking, see if you can notice how involved you are with your thinking. Do you find your thinking very interested? Are you glued to your thoughts? Are your thoughts, you couldn't care less about them, they come and go on their own and you're hardly involved? How wedded are you to your thinking? How invested? How much importance do you put into your thoughts? And then finally, another few moments of being with your thinking, but then as if your thinking mind is a muscle, as you exhale, see if you can relax the thinking muscle. Soften that part of your body that thinks. Relax. And now return to your breathing. And for the last couple of minutes of this sitting, let go of your thoughts the best you can and hang out with the rhythm of breathing. And then to end the sitting, you can take a few deep breaths. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So one of the functions of that exercise around thinking was to hopefully show you that there's more going on when you think than the content of your thoughts, the particular thing that you're thinking about. And that when it's possible in bringing mindfulness, attention to thinking, to notice more than what you're thinking about. One of the reasons why this is useful is that we're often captivated by the content of what we think. And to step away from the content and look at the bigger picture of what's going on gives us actually a more realistic picture of what's happening in the present moment. The content might not be have nothing to do about the present moment. Or if it is about the present moment, it might not be accurate even. What's the bigger picture? It's very helpful because also sometimes the content of what we think can be quite oppressive for people. And if we believe all the voices, all the messages that our thinking mind says, some people really are find it quite depressing, oppressive. Some people's minds are quite harsh, quite critical, self-critical. When I was in my 20s, an early new practitioner in Buddhism doing this meditation, I thought that gil was short for guilt because that was just so prevalent in my thoughts that I was wrong before I did anything. I was already wrong. And it was painful to have those kinds of thoughts. And I kind of believed the thoughts that my brain told me. And to be able to step back and have a more realistic picture of this is thinking. And it's maybe interesting, or maybe I should pay attention, but I don't have to automatically have to believe it. It can be very liberating. So to get a bigger picture, there's more going on. There's the tone of voice, there's the mood that's going on, there's the emotional connection, there's the energetics that are connected, how much energy and intensity or lack of it that's a part of it. There's a physicality. When you think, if your thinking is really intense, you can see it in other people's faces sometimes when they're really thinking hard and their eyebrows furrow and their eyes squint or they start doing things with their hands, scratching their head and there's all kinds of things people do when they start thinking energetically, physically. And when you sit and meditate, you can start, you can start sometimes feel the physicality of it. So I wonder if some of you would like to share a little bit what it was like for you to do that guided exercise on thinking. You discover something, any surprises for you? And
so I had a question. You said to notice if your thoughts are coming from any particular spot. And I was just wondering what the significance of that is, because I've always noticed, not always, but a lot of the time when I'm meditating, I feel like my thoughts are coming in like this laser beam.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I feel like my thoughts are coming in like this laser beam right here. And
they're coming in from outside?
Yeah.
Zapping?
Yeah. Like right into my left side here and into my eye, and I get migraines in this area, so I don't have no idea if it's related. Or
could be. I don't know what the significance is, but the opportunity then is to go and bring attention to that part where so what sensations come there when you're thinking?
So it just feels like really kind of heavy and dense.
Uh-huh. So then what we would do in mindfulness practice is you go and feel the heaviness and the denseness. And then and hang out there, meditate on that, and something will begin happening. I can't tell you what, but something will begin happening with that heaviness and denseness. And it's possible that there's a kind of, some people have the experience of that thinking comes with a certain kind of attachment or over-involvement. And that over-involvement with the thoughts is expressed in our muscles and what we do with our blood flow and a variety of things, and it builds up pressure. But if we can hold it in awareness, sometimes when we hold in awareness, remember I said earlier, if we look at something or hold it in awareness, then we're not feeding it. We're kind of like stepping back from it. And so if we're not feeding the pressure, not feeding the flow of blood to that area in the same way, then it has a chance to dissipate. And so it's well worth spending time just feeling it that way from the inside out. And if you get migraines, that's nice if you didn't.
Can you hear me?
Is the green light on? Yeah, turn it, hit it again.
Push till it's green.
Yeah.
Thank you. I may have tuned out a little tiny bit of what you said, but I perked up because it, I don't know. At one point you were saying, and if I'm saying this correctly, if I'm not remembering it correctly, please correct me, but I thought you said to try to imagine that we're the projector and our thoughts are on a screen.
Yeah.
And if that was what I remembered correctly, I was trying to do that, and it was really helpful because it felt like I had then some distance from the thoughts.
Great, good.
But I'm not, is that what you had said? Try to.
Yes. Some people, especially for the people who think more in images rather than words, where do those images appear? Is there like a screen in which they appear or a projector that seems to make them? And some people find that exactly what you said, then they get some distance from them and they can watch them and not be so glued to them or entangled in them.
Yeah, because a lot of mine are involved around fear, and I had some psychological trauma. So the idea of having those fearful thoughts, kind of on the screen makes it feel like there's distance.
Yeah, as opposed to?
Just, consumed in my head.
Consumed, yeah, beautiful, wonderful, yes.
Okay, thank you.
What I found interesting was when you gave us permission to sort of let the thoughts come back, that I remember kind of having an emotion of, or just, I don't know if it was so much the emotion, but sort of like as if my thoughts were kind of perched on this ledge, looking over saying, is it okay to come back? Is it okay to come back? And frankly, I was pretty reluctant because I was feeling I really liked concentrating on the breathing, and those thoughts really stayed sort of on that ledge for a really long time.
They didn't want to come back, or you didn't want to invite them back?
I didn't want to invite them back.
Because?
Well, because I think I suddenly found that the breathing and the just sort of being very present with that, that it was actually, it was very pleasant to have, well, pleasant, it felt like it was the right thing to have the thoughts really on the periphery, you know, out there on that ledge, kind of just being very gentle. Yeah, and so in other words, they weren't coming in with any force. It was as if they were still waiting for permission
Great.
To come back.
Wonderful. This is it's fascinating to discover all these things, all these options. There's so many options, and most people just live with one. And there's so many different options about thinking and thoughts. And how many of you have found that when you finally had permission to think, that it wasn't so easy to think?
The only time.
Yeah, I mean, you're just like, you know, you're trying to stay with the breath, right? And the thoughts, you know, you keep getting thinking and thinking. Finally, you just look them right in the eye, right? And where do they go? That's very instructive. And so remember, again, repeating myself now, maybe at least a third time, when we look at something like thinking, instead of getting be involved in thinking, we stop feeding it. And thoughts, the same chain of thought, only persists through time because we're involved in it. We're somehow identified with it, involved. And if we step back and look at it instead of being involved in it, then soon enough some of the fuel will go away and either quiets down or it fades away entirely. So one of the things we do in mindfulness meditation, we don't make thinking an enemy. We don't make the thought a problem, which is easy to think because so far I've been saying, let go of thoughts and come back to the breath. But that was only a preliminary instructions just to kind of get you started. As we get the full instructions, the instructions don't involve letting go of thoughts, but rather turning and being mindfully aware of them when they're present. Because remember, what are we trying to do here with mindfulness? We're trying to be mindfully present for what's happening. We're supposed to see what's happening, not trying to make something different happen. So if thinking is what's happening, then there's an art to being mindful of thinking in such a way that you don't just think better. Make some sense? And what about the tone of voice? Was that a surprise to someone, what you discovered? There in the back, Jim? Straight.
What I noticed was the nature of my thinking changed. It was less a critical voice that's always in the back of my mind, and it took on more the quality of a daydream.
Hmm.
Not judgmental, just more of a non-judgmental experience rather than a critical, self-critical voice in the background.
So you think maybe normally you have a critical voice in the background, but now when you had this permission to think and watch it in this kind of setting, it became more gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
And I was more of an observer rather than being enmeshed in it.
Great, lovely, lovely. Anybody else? Any surprises about the tone of voice? There were no tones. Sometimes people report they're surprised that someone else. They're surprised when they finally listen to their tone of their own voice. That it's someone else's voice that they internalize, like a parent or a harsh teacher or something. And what about the physical part of it? I asked you to notice if there's any physical connection to thinking. Were any of you able to kind of find some of that? It might be hard at the end of a meditation. Yes, please.
So the thoughts were going in and out like clouds, and I didn't feel like I was so attached to anything, except then there started to be a judgment about something that happened today with someone that I'm having a little problem with, and my neck started to get really sore. Mm. And it often happens that I hold tension in my neck, but I didn't realize that when I am judgmental, that it my neck starts to hurt.
Yes.
That was really, really interesting.
So there's a connection between how we think and what our tension and holding in our body.
I was so surprised with that.
The more mindful you become, more calm and centered and mindful you are, the more sometimes you feel almost like there's tentacles from your thinking going, spreading out in your body and pulling on different things lightly and energizing things. It's, you know, it's the whole body is connected in a wonderful way. And so you can feel that. So, mindfulness of thinking. So it takes a while to learn or to train the mind to be present in the present moment in a useful, mindful way. The tendency to be in thought, to be lost in thought, to be thinking about the past, the future, fantasizing, is so strong that people are seldom actually fully in the present moment. Especially when there's nothing grabbing our attention. You know, if you're, you know, running race cars at 100 miles an hour, you'll probably be present. You know, not going to be thinking about the past and future, but you're getting a lot of help to be present, your fear or something. But to sit quietly and have nothing entertaining, nothing dangerous going on, just you and breathing, what you're left with is you're left with your own natural capacity to be present, or lack of it. And what we try to do is we're trying to develop that natural capacity or the innate capacity so it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. And so one of the ways that's very helpful to do that is to come back to your breathing. The breathing is always happening in the present moment. And if all you did was, in fact, let go of your thoughts and come back to your breathing, that's time well spent. However, in full mindfulness practice, it includes, it's meant to include our full life. It's a way of developing a capacity to be aware of everything that's going on as it's going on. You don't have to be aware of everything at once, then you just get a headache. That actually happened to me. When I first introduced to this practice in Thailand, the way I heard the teacher, the abbot, gave the instructions, I heard it was, notice everything. Be mindful of everything. And so I was smart enough to know I couldn't be aware of everything that's going on in the present moment. So I tried to catch every sound in the noisy monastery, just limited just to that. I was chasing the... and I was getting kind of headache from it, so I went back and talked to him, and he said, no, you don't try to listen, pay attention to everything at once. You pay attention to everything one thing at a time. You know, so whatever is most prominent. So we start with, in meditation, we start with the breathing. And I find it very useful to make that the default, make that the center of gravity, make what we come back to there. At some point, some experience will be more compelling than your ability to stay with the breath. When it feels more compelling and more predominant, then the instruction is simply let go of the breath and bring your attention to that compelling experience, present moment experience. So and for the second week we talked about the body. So if it's strong sensations in the body, whether pleasant or unpleasant, the idea is to bring a meditative awareness, calm, deliberate awareness, and just hold that experience in awareness and just get to know it, be present for it. And you can breathe with it a little bit to see if that helps you stay present, or you can name it, or just somehow stay with it or explore it with the attention. The idea is to stay with it and get to know it. Be with it. When it's no longer compelling, then come back to the breathing and continue to develop your mindfulness and your concentration, your stability, your steadiness on the breath. If an emotion becomes more compelling, if it's not compelling, you're welcome to have emotions, just leave them in the background. You don't have to. But if emotions intrude so that it starts becoming difficult to stay with your breathing, then let go of the breath and bring your calm attention to be present for the emotion. Name it. That's so helpful with emotions, just to keep it, you know, happy, happy, sad, sad, just as it is. And then it's helpful with emotions to feel them in the body. All emotions have some corollary in the body. And one of the reasons why it's useful to feel the emotions in the body is that it's easier to step away from the story-making mind, which is often fueling the emotion. So the body is not a story. Also, there's something about feeling and emotions in the body that gives the body a chance to help you process the emotion, to let the unfolding of it happen in nice, whatever needs to happen. So it's kind of like makes room in the body for something to happen. So it's, if what's compelling is thinking, now if thinking is not so compelling, and just the mind wanders off in thought kind of casually, and it's often useful just to come back to your breathing. Come back. But if the breathing is really compelling and just keeps pulling you over and over again, or you can't even come back from it hardly at all, then what we do is we let go of the breath and we take thinking on as the object of attention. Like we did at the beginning of this guided meditation, I said, now you're allowed to think. So in the same way, when you take the thinking as the object of attention, you have permission to think. At that point, you don't have to let go of it anymore. Thinking is not your enemy, not your problem. It's just something to notice and pay attention to. But then, what you want to try to do is to avoid being seduced by the content, seduced by the identification that we have so strongly with it. We're often very invested in what we think. We think what we think is important. And maybe it is important, but brushing your teeth is important too. But you don't always keep your toothbrush in there, in your mouth, right? You take it out. So same thing with our thoughts. Our thoughts are important, but you don't have to always keep them in, you know. Yeah. And so you want to develop the ability to look at them, step and see more than what's happening in the process of thinking. So you can notice some of the things you can notice. You can notice I find it most useful to notice the physicality, the energy, energetics and physicality of thinking. I often will experience it as a pressure or a tension inside my skull in the middle. And bringing my attention there and just feeling the physical aspect of it is a way of not getting caught by the story, the content, but at the same time being present for the phenomena of thinking. And sometimes I'll feel it in my shoulders, and sometimes I feel it in my chest or my belly or different places where I feel the thinking is kind of activates certain parts of my body. And then we do mindfulness of the body in that part of the body. If thinking persists, it just really is insistent, keeps going really strongly, or if you let go and the same thought reappears over and over again, then what's helpful to do is to notice if there is an emotion connected to it. Because persistent thinking often is fueled by an emotion. So, for example, people who spend a lot of time planning, more often than not, are anxious. And it's the anxiety which is fueling the planning mind. And if you let go of the planning, the surface thoughts of planning, but don't address the anxiety is like a little factory working overtime to pump out new planning thoughts. And you can let go of planning forever and the factory just kind of produces more, right? And so you have to address the factory. And we address it by just bringing our attention to the anxiety. And then we do mindfulness of emotion, mindfulness of anxiety, feel it in the body, be present for it in a kind, simple way. Or it might be that you're thinking a lot about the past. Maybe what happened at work, and maybe what's fueling that is anger. You're irritated at a colleague or a boss, and so you have to get not just the content of the thought that's important, it's the underlying fuel of emotion that needs to be addressed. So if there's a persistent kind of thinking going on, go see, check it out and see if there's some emotion connected to it. And chances are that if there is, it's more important to bring your attention there than it is to resolve the thoughts and the ideas. Make some sense? And if it's really obvious, so with thinking, it can be, some people find it very helpful with thinking to use the technique of mental noting. It's kind of like using a thought to quiet the thoughts or get some distance from it. And it can be as simple as just acknowledging to yourself, thinking. Thinking is happening. Thinking. If without thinking, you can be a little bit more precise. Sometimes that's helpful. Like, so if you are planning, Just say planning, planning, I'm planning. That's what's happening now. If you step back that far and say, what's happening right now is I'm planning, I'm pretty sure that you've stepped away from your planning and not so involved anymore. Or remembering, remembering, or fantasy, fantasy, or something. Make sense? And then when the thinking no longer seems so compelling or so predominant, or you can let go of it, then come back to your breathing. If it still doesn't let go, your thinking, you can get a little bit curious on the content. Sometimes getting curious about the content is helpful, so if you're really gripped by it. And one of the fascinating things about the content of our thinking that if you can really appreciate helps, and that is appreciate how repetitive your thinking is. If someone walked next to you and talked to you as repetitively as you talk to yourself, you would ask them to stop, you would beg them to stop, you'd threaten them to stop, you'd wonder about their sanity. You'd certainly be bored after the 500th time. But what's most amazing is after 500 times, you're still interested in your thoughts. They keep going, right? Why is that? Why anybody else in the universe does that, you'd get bored. But for you, you're still interested. Why? My theory is that one way or the other, most of the thoughts, one way or the other, references back to yourself. And so your self-concern, self-interest, all these things are tied to those thoughts. It's not wrong to take care of your job to take care of yourself, so it's not wrong to then have that. But it kind of to realize that's what's going on sometimes can break some of the seduction, some of the trance, some of the attractiveness of all this thinking. You know, I've been thinking about myself for decades. And it hasn't helped much. The track record is not that great. Maybe for these 30 minutes I can put it aside. You know, I'll have a chance later. So the humor is helpful. If you have a sense of, if you can laugh at yourself, you'll never stop being amused. So the other thing that's interesting, if you have content that really grabs you, is sometimes it's interesting to add a word, either at the beginning or end of your thought. One word I like is maybe. Just at the end of whatever you're saying, maybe. And do it kind of like consciously, like pause, and then maybe. She hates me. Maybe. Or, you know, no one will ever like me. Maybe. Whatever. And sometimes that kind of break, there's amazing capacity to be in this kind of like, I don't know what to call it, a trance or seduction or to give all this importance to our thinking. I mean, some people think they are their thoughts. They're so identified with thinking that that's who they are. And there's some people who never question their thoughts. If they have a thought, it must be true. Thoughts are just thoughts. Just thoughts. That's the other thing to add. Rather than maybe at the end, just add just in the front. Just a thought. Thoughts are amazing. They have no weight, no shape, no color. And they're the things that we're at most attached to. Chances are that if you're attached to things, chances are very high you're not actually attached to the thing, you're attached to your thoughts of the thing. It's amazing. But it's just all these thoughts. There's a little teaching in, long, 40 years ago, there was a American practicing in India with a Vipassana teacher there, and he said this one thing that many of us teachers have repeated ever since. he said to her, because, maybe because what she brought to him, she was talking about her mother. My mother, probably some of you ready to talk about your mothers. My mother did this, didn't do that for me, whatever. Her mother was a big deal. And so the meditation teacher said to her, your thoughts of your mother are not your mother. And that freed her. Isn't that nice? She thought that her thoughts were the same thing. So she was kind of like, you know, duking it out. You know, but your thoughts are not the same thing as what you're thinking about. And the capacity to see a thought for what it is, to see it as just thought, and not be so invested in it, helps us to see through the thoughts, to see more clearly what's actually going on in our life. We have an amazing capacity to overlay the concepts, ideas, judgments, interpretations on top of our reality, top of what's going on. And so what we see is our interpretations and judgments. We don't really see what's there. And if we can see if we see thoughts as they happen, then we can maybe see, for example, a judgment as it begins happening, and we can see it as just a judgment. Maybe. So, you know, maybe it's true. Or we see it as an interpretation. We see the thought arise, we have a possibility to investigate and see, is this really accurate? When the thoughts come fast and furious and we're invested in the thoughts, glued to the thoughts, then we just think our thoughts are accurate representation of reality, what's going on. Making sense? So thinking can be part of the practice. If this seems too complicated to you, what I talked about, don't worry, then drop it. You can go back and just do the earlier parts of what I told you the earlier weeks. And a day will come when you're sitting quietly and calmly and some thought will come and you'll turn to it and see it as a thought and you won't get involved and it'll fade away. And they say, oh, that's what Gil was talking about. So when you're ready, it doesn't have to be now. Some of you will find it helpful now and some of you in due time. Okay? So I thought we would do one more meditation before ending. But before we do that, any questions about that? That anything is not clear or something you'd like to ask?
Is it possible to take the practice of noticing thought into your work during the day?
It is possible.
And interacting with your coworkers or your boss?
It is possible to do it. It's usually better to do it with a light touch, because if it's done with a heavy hand, like noting, then sometimes it can make us a little bit disassociated too. We kind of like pull back too far. But with a light touch, it can keep things looser and we don't get so tied up in what's going on.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I notice that when I, as soon as I notice that I'm thinking, I have a tendency to not let go of the thought so much as maybe squash it or just cut it off and not, it doesn't feel like it's fading away. It just feels like it's just abruptly kind of maybe tearing my attention away or something, but.
So if I understand what you're saying is that when you notice you're thinking, you just chop its head off.
Something like that, maybe. I mean, I have trouble observing it because it's gone.
Okay. So you might, I mean, so the general principle in this mindfulness practice is first, kind of maybe the first principle is be curious and to investigate, to discover what's going on. And sometimes it takes a while. You have to be patient to let it reveal itself. So something like that is something very interesting for you to notice about yourself. And because there might be some aversion and judgment about thinking that you're just pushing it away. I don't want to deal with that. Get away. You're not supposed to be here. You're bad or something. And if you have that kind of judgment, it's really like a lot of extra baggage to carry around. It's not needed. And it's possible to have a very friendly relationship with your thoughts. Thoughts are not bad in and of themselves. They're kind of innocent. until thoughts are. I would suggest that thoughts are completely innocent bystanders until you pick them up and get involved in them. And one way to be involved is to hate them, push them away. So you can look and see, study it. So, okay, let's do this sitting so that we have. So it'd be pretty short. It's almost time. So, sitting up straight, closing your eyes, and taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. If you need to be energized, if you're sleepy, emphasize the inhale. If you need to relax, emphasize the exhale. And then let yourself breathe normally. And then for a moment, take and bring your attention to the place in your body that you most associated with thinking. Like for me, it's the center of my skull, it's pressure or tension. Sometimes it might be the forehead, and the jaws or the neck. And take a few moments to just feel that part of your body. And then as you exhale, see if you can relax the thinking muscle. Soften that thinking part of your body. As you exhale, maybe imagine that it spreads out flat and broad, like the surface of a calm lake. And then bring your attention to your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. And then for the next few minutes, next 5 minutes or so, see if you can stay with your breathing best you can. But if thoughts or images arise, turn your attention to them and be clearly mindful that you're thinking. Maybe even quietly say, thinking, thinking. And then when it either fades away or no longer compelling, begin again with your breathing. And then we'll end this sitting, this meditation, with a little different involvement with thinking. And now, in the stillness and quiet of sitting here, see if you can bring up, intentionally bring up a thought about yourself that thinks well about yourself. Can you think thoughts of goodwill? Some thought of self-appreciation. Mindfulness can help us be free of our thinking, free from our thoughts. And in doing so, it can help us be wiser about how we think. And sometimes it's wise and appropriate to have thoughts of kindness for yourself and for others. And not to leave it to chance that maybe you'll have kind thoughts, but to do it on purpose. So, mindfulness of thinking. if mindfulness is not simple, it's not mindfulness. So, the danger with mindfulness of thinking, you start thinking too much about how to do it. Keep it simple. It's very simple. Just mostly like it's a seeing, not a thinking about. So we have one more week, and next week I'll talk a little bit about how to bring this practice into daily life. The focus so far has been more meditation itself, but everything I've taught can apply to daily life as well, and some people find that's where mindfulness has the greatest value for them, is in applying it to daily life. I'll also talk about some of the ways to deepen the practice, and some of the wellsprings of wisdom that can come out of this practice and support our life as well. So it's not just a matter of learning to see and be mindful, but it's also becoming wiser in the process of seeing clearly. So we have one more week. There is a handout for today, this blue piece of paper. And the last thing, in a week from Saturday, so I think November 2nd, we have a kind of a every year we have we call it a retreat, a three-hour retreat, workshop or something, of introduction to this Buddhism and more about Buddhism and to this practice for teens. And it's really a great thing. It's like 40 or 50 teens come here for this once-a-year event, and it's quite something to have them. They're bright and interested, engaged. And so if you know any teens who might be interested, it's kind of a special opportunity to come together and so many other teens to explore this stuff. So that's, I think it's in the afternoon on November 2nd. Oh, yes, so, and then, so that the rest of you don't feel left out, When we do this 5-week intro class here at IMC, we follow it with something that we call Beginner's Practice Group for 4 weeks. And this is a chance for you to come back and to get some follow-up support and a little bit of teaching, a chance to do some meditation, ask questions, and discuss what's going on with some of the most senior practitioners here at IMC. And so some of them are here in this room. And so Jim and Diana and I don't know if Richard, are you there, Richard? Do you come to that? And other people come. And a variety of people kind of circulate through. And it's not happening the week right after we finish. There's another event that week. But after that, there is for 4 weeks. So some of you might think of coming back, and it's a nice thing.
Is it the same time?
Same time, yeah.
Can I?
Yeah. Yes.
The Beginner's Practice Group is an opportunity to ask a lot of questions. Maybe you've been practicing for a while and some more questions. As well, it's an opportunity to meet some of the other practitioners. We'll break up into small groups and discussions and stuff like that. So a lot of people find it a really useful, valuable way to continue if they're just starting in this practice here. And everybody's welcome.
And they're less intimidating than me. So, and you can ask them questions now as well as before us, or me. I'll stay up here. Yes.
Sorry, the beginners practice group. So it starts on the 13th.
It's the 13th. Isn't it the week before? Is it that? The 13th. There's a flyer out there. Yeah. So that's probably right. Yes. Okay.